felt guilty about working this job because of exploiting people's pain. We had a call, and this was, I guess, in downtown Chattanooga, or pretty close by. And then there was a report of somebody riding around with a shotgun. You know, you got to do your job and make sure you don't get distracted by what's going on and not get the story. And so we went to the vicinity. We saw the car. We attempted to pull him over. He sped away, and we followed him. He pulled into his mother's yard to stay out of the shot, watch the cameraman, and just be a shadow. He threw out a bag of drugs. The money was flying everywhere, and his mother came out. He didn't do anything. Leave him alone. Make sure you have audio to match the pictures, which is not easy when you don't know what to expect and there's danger everywhere. The cops and the crew basically were filming this and also helped apprehend this guy at the same time. It's one thing to see something on TV because you take TV for granted as being safe, but he had a loaded shotgun, sawed-off shotgun, in the car, and he was apprehended and arrested, and I think that was the first major story. It's all real, and there's no staging. It's true reality. This is Tommy Cotter, and in 2001, I was given a call to help the cops' TV crew in Chattanooga. There was no one in Chattanooga at that time that they could find. And somehow they found me. I wasn't like enamored with the show, but sometimes it would be on and I'd be drawn in like a moth to a flame.
You're gonna be under arrest.
Hey, hey, what?
For breaking into your wife's house.
I had experience doing commercials, maybe a little documentary work as a sound location mixer. So I was quite adept at studio work and gear and stuff. I was self-employed. I couldn't have turned it down. I had to have it. I had a new son that was just about 6 years old. So I was like thrilled because I knew this being a network show, the pay was going to be good. I gave them a call. They gave me a call. I think it was two ways. I think we had a few words exchanged. Pretty much, we need you. Let's do this. You've got enough experience. We'll train you. Anybody that does this particular job has to be trained because there's really nothing like it, or there wasn't at the time. There's a lot of spinoff shows since. They sort of give you a lecture. It's like, okay, here's the equipment we use, and this is what you do. This is the bulletproof vest. Here's a waiver you sign in case you get killed. We're not responsible. I had to wear all black bulletproof vest every day. You can't wear a seatbelt. So already your life's in danger. It's one of the experiences that changed my life, quite literally. The company is set up to go to a particular city for 2 months. They have three teams of a cameraman and a sound man that ride with different cars, and they always pick beats and shifts that are most likely to get into really heavy stuff. In this case, it's East Chattanooga.
Of course, just like any other city, we've got our problems ridding this city of some of its criminal element. And that's what keeps me going from day to day.
Yes, I remember my first day on the job, absolutely. We went to this house and there was suspected burglary. And so the first time I went in there, I was shaking so much. What's going to happen? Does this guy have a gun? Is he going to kill us? You know, it's like I was over nervous about it. Turned out there was nobody there, and you know, nobody had broken in. It was a false alarm, basically. But that first night was a good lesson to relax. What you've got to do is you have to concentrate on your job. You can't think and dwell about danger. There would be nights where absolutely nothing happened. And then there would be nights with maybe two or three things would happen. It's a crapshoot. A lot of times there were instances that were just plain funny. But we got a call to go to a house, disorderly conduct or something, and approached this house and knocked. Nobody answered. And then a woman yelled out the window from upstairs, "Hang on, I got to put my leg on. I'll be down in a minute, y'all." I don't know why I thought that was funny. It's not funny that she didn't have a leg. It's just funny that she said it that way, I guess.
I am an international clown. I am world renowned.
We did a prostitution sting, undercover cop, dressed up like a clown, and we got him in like an ice cream truck. Rent Bobo the Clown for your party.
I can make you a dog out of balloons.
That won't work.
You'll probably make me handcuffs out of balloons too, can't you?
This truck pulls into a known area where prostitutes frequent and picks up hooker after hooker after hooker. And there's a hidden camera in the car. It's rigged for sound and camera.
Coco is not a clown. He's a police officer. Everything you said was recorded and videotaped.
The clown says, "Hey, baby, you know, officer money," and she takes the money, and then we bust her and film it.
I'm Coco the clown. I got a balloon for you.
The only reason I came down here was because of my parents, and I had to bury them Friday, so.
You had to bury your parents? That is nothing to tell a clown.
Well, I'm sorry.
But it was kind of sad, too, because you're, again, you're seeing women suffering and having to do things that most of them don't want to do.
The word's out there, don't get in a car with a clown. So we're going to have to come up with something different next time. It was a good job today.
Oh, everybody's a Coco the Clown fan.
And sometimes, you know, it's like either funny or not funny or painful or dangerous or all of the above at once. One thing that was scary, and there was a reason to be scared, is in Chattanooga, the worst area of Chattanooga, is pretty much what's called Fox. We spotted somebody looking suspicious, and the officer pulled over and said, "Let's check this out." Four guys, one appeared to have a gun, and he ran. So the officer went after him, the cameraman went after him and said, "You stay here and watch these three guys." They were jacked against a wall, facing a wall with their hands up. All I had was a boom pole and a microphone. I'm not a cop, and I'm guarding these three guys by myself. And I thought, if they don't come back, these guys could turn around and kill me because they don't know I'm not a cop, because we look like cops, but we're not. So I had to wait there like 15 minutes by myself watching these guys. And I didn't know if these guys had guns. I hadn't been frisked or anything. The cameraman, the cop was gone. I was by myself. And I had to say, "Y'all just don't move. Don't move." And I just kept saying, "Don't move." Any of them could have beat me up and killed me because they were all, you know, bigger than I was. And they were living in an area where they had to deal with that on a day-to-day basis, unlike me, who was lucky enough to grow up in a peaceful, happy, you know, environment. And they didn't say a word. They didn't move. And I'm grateful. Guys, thank you. The crew chose an officer to ride with. They always looked for someone that was really good at what they did, that always seeked out trouble, more or less. So that way they knew they had somebody that was brave, maybe crazy enough to make a story. You want to develop a rapport with the officer right away, and usually the cameraman is sort of in charge of making the officer comfortable and letting him know that, you know, we're not here to do anything but basically show what your job's like, show people that you're human and that what you're facing, you know, we're going to basically show you in a good light.
The common misconception people have about police is that we're not human beings. They automatically look at the uniform and automatically think that you don't have feelings or respect for them. Some people have had bad dealings with police.
There's a security about riding with police that comes naturally to most of us, and you feel a little secure. Well, you got a policeman, you know, in charge, and you feel protected. I'll tell you something that was always dangerous. There were situations where we had to chase people at 100 miles an hour in dark neighborhoods with no lights, running stop signs after a suspect with no seat belts. And I thought, I'm going to die. We're all going to die. We're just going to wreck because we're trying to make a story and he's trying to catch this guy and this guy is running like a fool and they're going to get him. And why do these people run? And that happened probably once a week at least in these high-speed chases at 3 o'clock in the morning. And that was so scary. So that was always dangerous. One of the cop's crew had his knees blown out with a shotgun by accident by a cop. And one of the cops in Chattanooga, Julie Jacks, that we rode with in Chattanooga, was murdered about a year after we rode with her. The one thing that did happen is I was trying to get out of the car once, and the cop changed his mind and got in the car, started the car, and took off. But my foot was under the back tire, and it ripped my boot in half. And I didn't get hurt, but it ripped my shoe in half. I had to put duct tape on my shoe for the rest of the night to continue the job.
2A, D10 on North Fifth.
You work 2 months, you go home 2 months, you go to another city, work 2 months, you come home 2 months, you go to another city, work 2 months, come home 2 months, and then you're off for a a month and a half or so for Christmas vacation, and then it starts all over. The pay was great. You know, they set you up with a place to live. You get per diem, plus your pay, car to drive, free meals every day. It took a couple of months, a couple of weeks to realize that I indeed was not in the most comfortable place in the world, but I would have to adapt to it the best I could, and I did the best I could. But it was not something I could do forever, and I knew that pretty quickly. If someone was new, they would make it or not make it within a few weeks. I think I was on the verge because I was not an ex-Marine. I was not a jogging person. You really had to run fast, and I could never run as fast as a cameraman, even though he was dragging a big, heavy video camera. And the cops, these guys had been doing it for years, and so they always gave me a hard time. It's like, you better run faster. There were a couple of times I couldn't. I tried, but I could not run fast enough. Well, there was just one time we went and chased a suspect that was selling pot in a project area, and this is probably the experience that was the most condemning for me from the team. Is like they had run like a half mile chasing this guy, and I could feel that my heart was going to give out or something. I tried, but I could not keep up with him. I missed a bit of audio, so they were really pissed at me, and they're saying, "If this happens again, you're out. You should have been there. You should have stayed with us. Why didn't you?" You know, I just couldn't keep up. And so I made sure it didn't happen again. A lot of these guys started out, and they had to keep working. So it changed them. Most of them ended up divorced because they were on the road all the time. Almost all of them became jaded by society because they saw the dark side all the time. And there's no break from that, you know. You can't be around negative things all the time without it affecting you. Well, I think there were some that started out that were, you know, fairly typical people that didn't have biases, that developed biases. And they go into a certain ethnic neighborhood and develop a bias because all they saw was the dark side. They didn't see the other side of the culture, and whatever culture that was, whether it's white trash or African American or Indian American, Native American or whatever. If you're exposed to bad people that are committing crimes so often, it's not something you can easily protect yourself from. It is quite possible to be politically correct and to be transformed by bad experiences. Oh, well, it's another victim, so what? They just became calloused. There's a better word for it, calloused.
When's the last time you had drugs?
I had some Sunday because it was my birthday.
Oh, you had some.
Like all human beings, there are good and bad characteristics. There are great cops that gave me such an admiration and understanding, and that I was so proud to know that they were the kind of people that wore the badge. And then there were people that were, I felt, mentally unstable, violent, and really enjoyed hurting people and fighting, enjoyed it to a point where it was kind of sick, sadistic.
Well, you know what? Take this as a belated happy birthday. Happy birthday. Stringer, put it in the back of the car, please.
She's one of them was so busy bragging about himself that he ran over a cat in the middle of the road, killed the cat, and just laughed about it. And that just, I just wanted to kill him. I said, "You son of a bitch," in my mind. I couldn't say a word. I wanted to strangle him, and he was just the worst of what you could have for a cop.
Big, bad, blue-stripe boy. You blue-stripe boy. You no Joe for nothing.
The main thing that bothered me is when we would be working on a suspect, and there were so many varieties, but a man in Fort Worth was pulled over. And he had just come out of an area where there was a known drug house. So we were staking it out, and we stopped him. He had a six-year-old boy in the back of his seat. He just copped some heroin, and he was about to shoot up. And so they had to arrest him, and the boy was crying. And I was thinking about my boy at home, and it was all I could do to hold back tears. I could not stand to see people suffering, innocent people, children. That got to me and never got better. That part never got better. But I hung in there, and I hid that. because if you expose your weakness, the crew will pick on you. Be tough or you're out. You know, it's this kind of macho kind of attitude. And I think that comes with being in that environment. It taught me in a way that there was no other way to learn it unless I was in the military in a war, or I was a victim of being a prisoner or tortured or kidnapped or something, you know, intense. And this was not that, any of those things, but it was a glimpse. And it was enough to make me aware that people are going through this, and I can't shut it out. I can't shut it out. Being called to a motel, and a wife reported that she had just been beaten up. And so we went looking for this guy, and looking and looking and looking. We found him hiding in the kudzu, and finally put him in jail. But it just reminded me that, you know, this is intense, and there's an example of pain. You know, it's like, in a way, I felt involved in some fashion. You may not be responsible for some of the actions, but you are actually part of what's going on, and you, if it's something dangerous, then that's part of it too. They make money on it. They make lots of money on it. I don't know if it'll ever end, because people are so fascinated by other people suffering.
What am I doing? I'm just going home. Just the one home.
Put your other hand behind your back.
I wasn't doing anything.
Put your other hand behind your back.
And that shows you one trait humans have. They want to see how other people handle situations, especially when they are in bad ones. I would think it's a flaw. Instead of being compassionate and sickened by suffering, people seem to have an appetite for it. Media especially exploits that, and cops is simply doing what the media does. If it's legal and society doesn't fix the problems, can you blame anybody? Can you blame anybody but ourselves? I don't think so. It took me a year to figure out that I just need to go home and do something else, because I'm not going to be away from my kids and family. I can't do that because it's not going to help the family. It's bad for the family. That was my main decision. The other thing was, I don't want to get killed or jaded. And if I stay around, there's a chance that I become messed up from doing it too long. And our environment will slowly shape who we are, whether we like it or not. So it's very important that all of us protect our environment to fit what we truly believe. That's a big lesson I learned from it. Huge lesson. I don't care who you are. That's going to affect you and change you, and the same with the crew. And I think it affects me to this day still, and on a subconscious level. Makes me suspicious of strangers that I don't know subconsciously, because I've always been open and gregarious and trusting person to a fault in many ways. But after this experience, I still have my guard up until I really feel like I know or sense somebody, where they're coming from. I don't trust them the same way I used to. I think about that little boy and that heroin addict. I still think about that. And they're still running all of the years from the first till now. And, you know, my brother lives in England. He saw my name on some reruns over there. It's like, really? They're still running the old ones too? I mean, they got plenty of them. I'm grateful for the experience. Even though I feel pain from it, because I know so much more about the truth of society than I wanted to know, and I don't know that I would ever want to know what I know, but I do know it, and I can't turn it off. I just want to see society do more to keep people from suffering as much, and I feel a pain for society I never felt before. I want it to be a good thing, but it's scary. You can't allow what's going on in the world to take your joy away, and you have to fight for your joy as an individual. And yes, it's a scary world for everyone in some sense, but we have to claim our right to be happy, and we still, in spite of all the crazy stuff that goes on, in the end, we have to trust somebody, you know, or why are we here? No point in it otherwise.
132 in Bush, I've got him at gunpoint.
Okay, gunpoint, 132 in Bush, covers code 3.
Thanks, Ted.
Phoenix 2514.